VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to Wine Times, the podcast brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club, with me, Makita Oliver.
And me, Will Lyons, the Sunday Times wine columnist and vice president of the Sunday Times Wine Club.
And this show, Will, is quite fantastically all about wine. Red, white, rosé, sparkling.
Italian, French, Australian, South African. And all the rest.
That's right. This series, we're going to be tasting our way through those tannins, which you're going to explain to me what that means later on.
I really will.
Because I really don't know. And we won't be doing it alone. No, not at all. Who do we have, Will?
Oh, you can't do it alone. So every episode, we'll be joined by a well-known guest for some good wine, good times, and good conversation.
This is like so much fun. And remember, the wines featured in this episode and all others are available through the Sunday Times Wine Club. If you haven't signed up yet, there'll be a link in the episode description for you. I mean, I love them. They sent me a huge case of wine already, so I love them.
So whether you're an expert with a broad palate,
or you just tend to stick to the house stuff,
in this show, you're sure to find something that will suit your taste.
We're here in the wonderful Wadadley kitchen. It's beautiful. It's just beside the River Lea in London's Hackney Wick. It's owned by the incredible, vivacious, stunning, talented broadcaster and chef, Andy Oliver, who is a wonderful woman. She's also my mother. Yes, she's my mother.
Sipping along with Makita and myself today are the broadcasters, Sunday Times bestsellers and vegan chefs extraordinaire, Henry Firth and Ian Theasby.
You may know them by their other name, Bosch, the vegan food partnership, who for the last 5 years have been making moves in the industry. From what began as a successful YouTube channel, these boys from Sheffield have now gone on to host their own ITV show, Living on the Veg. Their debut cookbook has become one of the UK's all-time bestsellers, leading them to partner with brands such as BrewDog and Kettle Chips to bring vegan food into the 21st century. The men of Bosch, welcome.
Now then, how's it going?
Yeah, hello, do you like being called the men of Bosch? I quite like that.
That's quite cool, isn't
it? Yeah, usually we get called Bosch boys, which we like, or Bosch brothers.
Yeah, or Bosch lovers. Some people wonder whether or not we're lovers, but we're not brothers or lovers. We're just mates.
We've been working together for an extraordinarily long time. How long has it been now?
Oh, God, we worked together. We've been doing Bosch for about 5 years. Before that, we worked together for about 3 or 4 years, and we lived together. So that's quite a weird thing to do, right?
It's quite the relationship.
Yeah, we've known each other since we were 11. We were both from Sheffield and grew up together.
Love that you've built an empire together.
I don't know about an empire, but
excuse me, in my intro it says the debut cookbook, one of the UK all-time bestsellers. That is really
that's
wonderful.
True. That's a nice intro, whoever wrote that.
Yeah. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
So today we're going to talk about wine. We're usually guided on our wine journey by the wonderful Will Lyons. How are you with wine? Have you been drinking it since the 11-year-old days in Sheffield?
Yes, I would say that I'm definitely more of a red wine person. I feel like there's a beautiful kind of romanticism about a night on the red wine when you get a little bit giggly.
Totally.
And a little bit kind of, you get those Friday eyes.
Yeah.
But I'm certainly not an expert. Ian is more into high-grade wine than I am.
Well, I wouldn't say high-grade. It's just, my idea of high-grade is £20 rather than £5.
Yeah, me too.
Puts you into the fine wine territory.
Yeah, I mean, and definitely. recently, I've been nipping into a really nice wine shop on the New King's Road. Ooh, and the chap in there is very, very knowledgeable. But you'll say, oh, this is nice, 25 quid. He's like, no, don't go for that one. Go for this one, it's 17. So he's obviously like selling quality rather than just trying to make some money, which is great.
Do you have a favourite country or region? Have you got that far down the wine route yet? Don't worry.
No.
We're not getting that.
Sheffield. Yeah. Does Sheffield make wine?
No,
I think there is a vineyard in Yorkshire.
Is there?
Yes,
there is. Because if you look at the map of English vineyards, and we have a lot now, we have over 200 actually.
What?
I think it does stretch. Well, it stretches as far north as Northumberland.
Yeah.
And there is one being planted in the west of Scotland actually at the moment.
Right. Okay.
Is that as high up as it's ever gone?
Well, there was a very famous one in Fife in a place called Lower Largo, mm-hmm. and it was a farmer called Trotter. And he made this wine. Of course, it's very wet there, and wet weather is the enemy of English wine because it creates rot, and you can't ripen the grapes properly. And to his own admission, he gave up because I think he did absolutely describe it as undrinkable.
Are we drinking vegan wine? Because the boys are, you know, at the helm of the vegan empire.
Important question.
So, Will, what's the answer you said?
Well, I was hoping in this podcast, actually, you could educate me as much as I could educate you.
Would love to, yes.
But am I right in thinking the rule of thumb is that the main area of concern is the use of animal-based products in the fining of the wine?
Yes. So we are drinking vegan wine, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Excellent.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, look, this, we're going to get into a grey area, right? But the grey area is, some people might say, well, there are insects killed in the harvesting of grapes. And that basically would mean that no fruits or vegetables can be eaten because, you know, every piece of modern farming is going to affect insects and things like that. So that, as a vegan, isn't the kind of realm we get into.
Yeah.
That's kind of silly. And I think there's a word called whataboutery,
yeah.
where people are kind of criticising your kind of core decision and principle based on what about this and what about that. And it's kind of not the point. But yes, for us, some wines might be made with finings. Some wines actually will have gelatin used for the finings. And sometimes it will be refined from, I think it's fish gills.
Yes. Isinglass.
Exactly. Isinglass, yeah. That's the word. And also some real ales as well might use isinglass. Even like some beers would do it as well. But most beers now are fine, most premium lagers.
Mm.
Some cool real ale companies are doing vegan ales. Mm.
They'd be fools not to, really. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a growing market.
Yeah, it's a growing market.
And luckily lots of wine is now vegan. So
Are you quite relaxed with that then, with finding that uses fish?
I don't tend to drink that. But I kind of remember which ones are in and which ones are out.
Yeah.
If you're at a wedding, you know, you're probably going to make it. You might go to the bar. So I might go to the bar at a wedding. I don't know. You'll see what would happen.
Yeah, say if someone's like, mate, you want a drink? And you're like, yeah, go on then. And it's like a throng of people by the wedding bar. You know, if someone passes you a glass of wine that might have slipped through the net, you're not going to beat yourself up about it.
Yeah.
But if you really did want to know about vegan wines, there's a fantastic website called barnivore.com. Excellent. You just type in the name of the wine and it will just tell you straight away if it's vegan or not. It's great.
I've actually used that.
So we're kind of like firm advocates of people eating vegan food and trying it out. Alcohol is not really our thing, although we like to make cocktails.
I like to drink it.
But we would definitely steer clear of non-vegan beers and wines as far as we can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where do we begin our vegan wine
journey
today?
Well, we're going on a French tour today.
Nice.
So every wine we have is from France. And we're starting off with one of the most famous white wines of France. And I will pour out...
I just read what it is. I'm so happy.
It's a wine that you've probably all heard of. But are not too familiar with it. Sancerre.
I have.
So we're in the Loire Valley.
Oh, lovely.
The grape variety is Sauvignon Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike Sauvignon Blanc from, say, New Zealand or Australia or Chile, it doesn't have that huge. It can do, but talking generalizations, it hasn't built a reputation on huge amounts of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at much more savory, subtle characters here. Because this is a wine that's really, you know, made to go with food.
So this would be perfect for like a salad or some kind of
absolutely.
Maybe
absolutely
a more summery meal.
It's crystal clear.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. That's so good
thanks for having us.
That cheers so good for
yeah, I know.
Podcast.
So actually you do get some herbal notes. You get some grassy aromas there. So it is that lovely Sauvignon aromatic.
Like walking through a meadow.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that it's so aromatic.
It's very light, isn't it?
Yeah, very light. It would go really well, as you said, with, you know, salads, anything tomato-based, lettuce, things like that. And I always think that in this particular series, we have to suspend our imagination and just imagine that it's midsummer or early spring,
exactly.
May, June, beginning of the cricket season.
Sat there on a terrace, like, overlooking the garden, having a nice crisp glass of this.
It's really
and
fruity.
It's 5 o'clock. Yeah. You've had a hard day, and then you get handed this.
Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah.
It's lovely. It's really refreshing, but also like you can taste the fruit in it. Mm. I like that. It gives it a little bit of depth, and it stays in your mouth.
Yeah. It does, and the flavour's developing. It's kind of, it's got quite a sharp up note in the aftertaste. It's kind of like, it's not unpleasant though. It's kind of, it's sharp but
so flumpy. I want to talk about that.
Incredible use of the word flumpy.
There is a word here that wine columnists and wine snobs use the whole time, and your chap on the New King's Road will be using this. Mm-hmm. It's called minerality. Mm-hmm. It's all about the aftertaste. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking to Gregory Porter, he was talking about this. So essentially, you might think of describing wine as all about the fruit and the herbal flavours and the sort of floral aspect. But a really attractive part of the flavour of wine is those savoury flavours you get, which that they can be sour. But here, it's almost salty, isn't it, on the aftertaste?
Ooh, yeah.
And it's a long aftertaste as well. Mm. It's almost like stone, you know, but... I mean, how do you know what a stone tastes like?
Well, if you think about water, you can now apparently get sommelier for water.
Yeah, you can. No.
So presenting you with different types of water from different places, and you're essentially tasting the mineral content of that water. Mm. So I guess that's going to have a bearing on the flavour of wine, is those little things that are dissolved in the liquid itself.
Absolutely.
And the sort of classic note for Sancerre is flinty. I mean, that's what you need to say to your chap.
Flinty.
So you
like stone.
So you've got this sort of grassy aroma.
Flinty.
A little bit of citrus notes. Are they lime? Are they grapefruit? Are they lemon? And then you taste it, and that dryness. And that's what makes it go so well with food, actually.
I quite like the fact that there seems to be, well, I suppose this is the same with most wines, where it's almost like two tastes for the price of one. Because you've got it as you bring it into your mouth, and you put it down your throat, but then the breath afterwards just brings a whole bunch of new sensations.
Absolutely. You get all of that nose, don't you, the aroma, which is similar to how you should drink espresso. And sometimes if you have a little sip of water, that flavour will actually intensify.
So how old is this?
So this is 2020. But when people talk about a complex wine, people are like, what on earth people... And it's exactly how you describe, in that you've got layers of flavour.
Yeah. Mm.
There's a lot going on. It's not a one-dimensional. It's not like it's sort of, you know, a cool lager that refreshes and that's it. There's the aroma. Yeah. Then there's a texture in your mouth, which is light and darts across your mouth. And then there's the aftertaste.
Yeah.
But also it will evolve. Yeah. Over the years in a bottle as well, so you get layers and layers of complexity.
And with regard to the taste, it also evolves out of your mouth but into your head.
Yeah,
like wine does. You know, it's kind of
does that.
It is, but like you know, when we've all been young and we've all like gone out and drunk to get drunk.
Yeah,
right. But now you drink to sort of appreciate it, and the sort of subtle drunkenness that sort of creeps into your brain like a nice wisping kind of haze is really, really appreciative. Like it's lovely. And you can see, I can feel it already, like the way that it's just kind of creeping into my brain. Yeah.
And that's what great wine does, it relaxes you, and it creates this lovely ambience, doesn't it? That's part of it. I mean, obviously that's part of the alcohol speaking.
But you guys, exactly, everyone's just pissed now. you guys aren't actually trained chefs, so how did you actually start cooking together?
Yes, absolutely. We're not trained chefs. We are passionate, well-trained home cooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were mates, and we were cooking for each other, and we both were really, really kind of motivated by climate change. And then we realized that there was a link between what you eat and your greenhouse gas emissions. So that's what kind of turned us down the route of eating vegan food. And, and then we saw there weren't enough vegan recipes out there.
Because this is 6 years ago, things weren't the same.
No, David Attenborough had not made the link between diet and climate, and nobody really knew it back then. So we cottoned onto that, and we thought, well, we love to cook, we love food. We already had a pretty decent cookbook collection in our home, although they were all meat dishes, you know. There was, like, I had an amazing lamb Rogan Josh recipe I used to cook, and we used to make steak.
Henry's like talking about old lovers.
Yeah, exactly. I can't talk about old lovers like that, I'll be divorced. so we essentially realized that we could combine our love of food and our desire to help the planet and our new learned ability to cook, and probably the ability to make videos, into something that looked a bit like a business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ultimately share vegan recipes with the world. So that's why we started.
Yeah.
But then since then, it's been a lesson in learning.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why our recipes are just have really popular, like, we've had loads of views on social media, we've sold loads of books, and people seem to cook our recipes all the time. I think the reason why people like to cook our recipes is because it hasn't been cooked by professional chefs. Mm. It's been cooked by people who are just, you know, like, do their best in the kitchen, and the best, it happens to be quite tasty, and it's nothing too difficult in terms of the techniques that we use, so it's very approachable.
This is such an important point that I feel about cookery writing as like you, a complete amateur, in that sometimes the most technical, you have a look at these recipes and you're like, there's so many ingredients.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where am I going to get that, by the way? I've only got a local co-op.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're going to do it and you're like, you know, it's just so complicated.
Yeah, it really is.
Do you know, there's a thing that I think often a professionally trained chef would do. And by the way, can I just say, we have the utmost respect for professionally trained chefs.
Oh, absolutely.
We could never deliver 100 covers a night in a kitchen. We'd completely mess that up. But they'll do things like, they'll come up with a recipe, but then they have to add barberries and thyme and think about a different way of cooking that is outside of the norm, which actually alienates your classic home cook.
Yeah.
Whereas I think we are unashamedly basic.
Yeah.
We did a beans on toast for April Fool's one day, which no chef in their right mind would do. And that basic approach to food that people want to cook is what's resonated with people.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
The classic match for this would be something like creamy goat's cheese.
Okay, yeah. Mm.
Or half a dozen oysters, something like that. From a vegan's perspective, and I'm thinking now, I love the think of this.
Mm. Yeah.
What would you pair with this? Now, we've talked about salads. Mm-hmm. That would go very well.
Yeah. Mm.
But I'm thinking maybe pasta? A bit of spice?
I'm feeling pasta? Like a cacio e pepe. So we've got a gorgeous recipe for cacio e pepe, which is essentially Italian mac and cheese.
I know,
pasta with cheese with crazy amounts of pepper. And actually, recently, I've been obliterating my cacio e pepe with pepper.
Yeah.
So, like, silly amounts of pepper that anyone would say that's stupid. But I'm big on strong flavours.
Yeah.
So I think the cheesiness of that, which actually comes from nutritional yeast, and maybe a good vegan cheese, because there are bad ones, I think that would go really well.
And that would marry with that acidity and that salty character.
The flintiness.
Yeah.
The flintiness.
Yeah.
So that was the domain, Michel Thomas Sancerre. I think Lauren is a winemaker, and it comes from the west side of Sancerre. It's a lovely family-owned company.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, that is super.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. Remember, the wines featured in this episode and all others are available through the Sunday Times Wine Club. If you haven't signed up yet, there'll be a link in the episode description for you.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts. Calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Where are we going next?
Right, William? Well, let's tip our wines into
this. Not drinking it all. Oh, this is
well, we've got two more coming, guys. So
two more coming.
Keep them coming.
So we're leaving the Loire Valley, and we're heading west. So we're... No, heading east, sorry. East. We would probably... If we were travelling, we'd probably go to Paris, stop off at Paris.
Oh, nice.
And we're going down to a region which you've definitely heard of, which is almost going through... Not going through a purple patch, but almost reinventing itself in fashion. Beaujolais.
Excellent.
But we're not talking about Beaujolais Nouveau, which we've just had. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Cru Beaujolais. So this is the 10 villages that put their name on the label. The grape variety is Gamay. Mm-hmm. And in France, they have this wonderful word for it called Goulion, which means digestible wines.
Goulion.
Yeah, Goulion. Mm. So but Beaujolais Nouveau used to be the first wine that arrived on these shores from this year's vintage. So they pick the grapes, you know, in September, October. And then they would speed up the sort of winemaking process by carbonic maceration. And then they would bottle it and they would bring it to England. Mm-hmm. And it was a Sunday Times journalist called Alan Hall, who used to write the Atticus column, who in the early 70s, he was also on the board of the early Sunday Times Wine Club, I believe. Yeah. But he wrote in his Atticus column that he would donate a bottle of champagne for the first person, the first reader that could bring back a bottle of the new vintage of Beaujolais Nouveau, which was always the third Thursday of every November. Now, back then, you know, the Sunday Times was like Google, first page of Google. So
I see, everyone
did it. And the person that won the race actually hired a private plane.
Oh, back in the early 70s.
No way.
Arrived
That's
at the Sunday Times office.
Oh, my God.
Late at night, I think they're at Gray's Inn Road, so just off Fleet Street.
Yep.
Of course, there was nobody there because you know, everyone went down the pub.
Yeah, of course.
banged on the thing. There were probably a few cleaners there and the printers below. And of course, he wins a bottle of champagne. And then the Beaujolais run became a thing, and everyone would race. And it was a big thing in the early 80s.
That's
and
so
you know,
cool.
People were using hovercrafts.
Oh, wow.
Elephants were used. The Red Arrows were involved, bathtubs.
So 80s, isn't it?
So 80s.
Race to get wine first.
And then it sort of left these shores. And the two countries that really took it up were Japan, where it's still quite big, and America, where they didn't say the Beaujolais has arrived. They said it's Beaujolais time.
It's Beaujolais time!
Is that where it's Miller time comes from? They just stole that.
But your real connoisseur... We'll look at Beaujolais Cru, which is what we're drinking now. So it's all about the soil. So you've got granite soils. It's a much more serious product. And there's these 10 villages, Brewery, Chirub, Saint-Amour. We're in probably the most easy to like, Fleury, which has that sort of silky texture. So when you put it in your mouth, but also notes of, there's sort of red floral notes there. So raspberry.
Yeah, I would say that wine tastes like confectionery.
Yeah,
like it's got a tutti frutti kind of almost unnatural sweetness to it. Mm. Like on your opening kind of taste,
it's super easy to drink.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it is really pleasing the way it flows all around your mouth.
Yeah I was going to say Fleury's quite dangerous.
A bit like Vimto.
Oh really?
A bit like Vimto.
A bit like Vimto.
Exactly.
A cheeky Vimto.
It's that marriage between raspberry fruit and cherry.
Okay.
Sourness or pomegranate.
Yeah, it's deeply Moorish.
Yeah.
So, really nice. Let's talk about, if we may, vegan food pairings.
So I would say we could have a vegan meat platter.
Yes.
We like to make a bacon where we'll use things like soy sauce and paprika and maybe a hint of maple syrup. And actually what you find with those flavours, you can almost turn anything into an alternate bacon. So you might have a vegan bacon sandwich made out of tofu instead of bacon, but it's fried to perfection. You might also make, let's say, a carbonara with those little bacony pieces. We've also used mushrooms as alternatives for bacon because they have that kind of meaty flavor,
heady flavor.
Exactly.
Totally
very good
cook
idea.
Them perfectly with the right spices and the right cooking, you can get something really salty and satisfying. That would go great with this.
Yeah. Lunchtime, mushroom.
Yes.
Mushrooms are so interesting in that world of because for my mum's cooking, Caribbean cooking, vegetarian is Ital.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
And it's obviously the way Rastafarians have been eating for hundreds of years.
It's old news for them.
So,
right?
Yeah, they're like, please, veganism. We invented this. But she did this thing, and it's so interesting. I think the way you slice something can change everything. She did an oyster mushroom hot
King
dog.
Oyster. The big fat
one. Yes, the big fat one. And it was like, and what she did is, I think they scored it.
Yeah.
And then cooked it properly on the big old grills outside. And I was just like, it was like meaty, delicious pork.
Yeah. Yo, it's unbelievable what you can do with King Oyster mushrooms. But on the point of Ital food with mushrooms, so we've got a friend of ours, Marcus, and his dad, Malcolm, is Bayesian. And whenever we went around to his house for dinner, he would be like, no mushrooms because they're Duppy umbrella.
Yeah. But it's also called Jumbie's umbrella. Jumbies, like in different countries, it's a Duppy or a Gumby.
Right.
Which is a ghost that lives underneath mushrooms.
Yes.
And our friend Nat, who his dad is from St. Kitts, his dad Joe, shout out to Joe for this. He wouldn't eat mushrooms, and neither would Nat, because they think, little demons live underneath the mushrooms.
Absolutely. I wouldn't say mushrooms are a huge part of Ital cooking. My mum just did it.
nice.
But on the subject of cooking with mushrooms, there's a replacement for meat. Honestly, King Oyster mushroom is the best mushroom to replace meat. You can turn it into bacon, as Henry was saying before. You can turn them into scallops. Mm. You can pull them like pork or chicken.
Wow.
You can chop them into ribs. In fact, we've got a video on one of our social media channels on Instagram. It's called The Ribs Cage, which you basically take one of those King Oyster mushrooms, you chop off the cap, you slice off the sides a little bit, and then you fry it in a pan. But as it's frying, you take a potato masher and you squeeze down on it to get rid of all of the excess moisture, and what you're left with is something ridiculously meaty.
It's like a steak.
Yeah, it really
kind
is.
It feels like, as your mouth feel, it feels like the fatty part of ribs.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's got a real kind of nice fatty texture,
which
is wonderful. And obviously the nice thing about mushrooms is they'll grow in the dark.
Yep.
They'll grow in 15 days. You can grow them on coffee grinds.
Yep.
Or you can put them in the sun and they get extra vitamin D.
Oh my goodness.
And they are rumoured that they can also travel through space and potentially may have been the cause of life on Earth.
Yeah.
But
stop
we don't
it.
Want to go down Seriously. A rabbit hole there.
Yeah.
But if you don't believe me, just Google, Google mushroom spores, outer space, Earth. Population propagation.
Yes, I'll definitely do that.
Stoned ape theory.
Another really great theory about mushrooms.
Yeah.
Well, whereabouts are we going in France?
Well, we're going to southwest France, so we're leaving.
Lovely.
Bourget, and we're going to Bordeaux.
The
world's largest fine wine region.
Mm.
Is it really the largest in the world?
Even more so than, say, California.
Well, I mean, it's amazing that Bordeaux produces around between 750 and 800 million bottles a year.
800 million.
And they do red wine, white wine, sweet wine, rosé, a little bit of sparkling as well. It's a huge region. It produces more wine than Australia, actually.
Mm. Who drinks all the wine?
Us.
We have a long, long track record that goes back to the 12th century.
The Brits.
Yeah, the Brits.
Mm-hmm.
The Dutch drink a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now North America, Russia, China.
Yeah.
It's the Bordelais love to travel. They're great travellers and they love to, you know, tell us how great their wine is. Now,
amazing.
Fresh glasses.
Ian, can I just ask, is this the best podcast you've ever done? No, I think it's the best podcast I've ever done.
I mean, it's such a... Yeah. It's great. Literally, we're just sat here drinking wine, having a nice chat about wine. It's fantastic.
Well, now we're going to talk about your book.
Oh, fantastic.
Bosch on a Budget.
Yes.
I do also think there might be some people that think changing the way they eat is going to change financially for them. It's going to be more expensive. Mm. And I think that terrifies people because people are really set in their ways with their budgets and things like that. But it's just not true, is it?
No, totally. You know, with Bosch, we've always set out to bust the misconceptions about vegan food. People think it's boring, doesn't taste good, rabbit food, you know?
Yes.
Which, by the way, 5 years ago it was, if you went to a pub, it was lettuce and chips, was essentially what
some
you could eat.
Some pubs still is.
Some pubs it still is.
What are you having for your Christmas dinner?
Yes, I am having gnocchi and courgette.
Are you?
Which is some pub in London, that's their Christmas dinner. It's so easy to make a vegan roast dinner. We've showed people how, but some pubs still can't work it out.
It's like, surely it's just a bangy nut roast.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But that's another story. So we want to bust these misconceptions and show that vegan food can be something people enjoy from time to time. It can be delicious, it can be nutritious.
Mm.
And yes, people often think that vegan food is expensive. Doesn't have to be. The core nuts and bolts of vegan food are essentially fruits, vegetables, legumes, nuts, all of these really healthy and really affordable things that you can get hold of. When it starts to get expensive is when you pick up those boxes that are now available in every supermarket that have a burger for £3 or maybe the kind of high end of the sausages. That stuff can really add up. So we really wanted to showcase with Bosch on a budget just how pocket-friendly vegan food can be.
Well, now, I mean, I'm already sold because now that Ian said about all the things you could do with a mushroom, I'm like, I don't want a fake vegan burger. I'd like to slice a mushroom and get it in a pan.
Yeah, I think vegan food for any foodie, for anybody who really like appreciates food and the process of cooking food and making something from nothing out of a bunch of ingredients, vegan food is kind of like opening a door and walking into a room you've never been in before. But it isn't a room, it's like a chateau. Using a French plug. It's like you could just walk in there and you can, because there's 80,000 vegetables that are edible on this planet.
Right.
And if you've never eaten vegan food before and you're only like, you've eaten meat, I mean, what are you going to eat? You're going to eat beef, pork, lamb, turkey, chicken. After that, you know.
Fish.
But that's, you know. But I genuinely think that if you like food and you like cooking, adopting a vegan diet or at least trying vegan food is such a fantastic way to walk, like to just get you cooking again. Like,
but I like the idea of doing a couple of days a week.
Yes,
you know, I think that's a really good way to get into it.
Totally, Monday's a great place to start.
I think it's brilliant.
If the whole country were to do that, it would be amazing. You know, just meatless Monday, or maybe even just a vegan breakfast.
Yeah, man,
it's a good place to start.
That is good.
Yes. What would a vegan breakfast look like?
Good question. Porridge.
Okay, so a lot of people like scrambled eggs for breakfast because obviously it's full of protein. It's super quick, and we made a really nice scrambled egg recipe, but obviously with vegan ingredients, and our vegan ingredients is tofu. So we take two types of tofu. We call it the two tofu technique, and we basically take some silken tofu and we blend it in a blender, and we cook that in a pan with a bit of olive oil or vegan butter if you want the fat. Then we take a little bit of the stuff called black salt, which is also known as kala namak. It's got a really sulfuric kind of like scent to it. Bit of that in there, a little bit of turmeric for colour, and then you take a big lump of regular firm tofu, crumble that in there, and then you put it all over with some garlic and some spring onions, and what you're left with is something that is as protein rich as eggs, super easy to make and utterly delicious.
Yeah. Perfect. That sounds delicious. And then have it with a strong coffee.
Blending the silk and tofu first.
I like the idea. Two tofu technique. You heard it here first.
Yum. Tell us about the wine.
Well, so it's a bit of a challenge again, and I think the challenges have got more challenging, actually, because we're at the left bank of Bordeaux. So if you think of Bordeaux, it's a region defined by water. It's on the Atlantic. The Gironde estuary comes in. So on the left bank, which is a sort of south bank, that you have the famous red wines there are grown with it's a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Petit Verdot. As a huge generalisation, the right bank is softer and more supple. The left bank, which we are drinking now, is more powerful. Mm-hmm. And it has, we talked about minerality, which is a salty flavour. This has tannin.
Yes.
Now, tannin you get in the pips and the stems and the skins, and it dries out your mouth.
Yes.
And it goes, this is why, please don't punch me, but it goes beautifully with roast beef, you see, because the protein breaks down the tannin. So I was wondering, how do we do this with vegan food?
I would say, you know, in all these things, there are now alternatives. So I'm going to take you down the burger route. I don't know if you've tried them. Some people don't like them, but lots of people like them. There are incredible vegan burgers out there now. So you can get this a burger called the Beyond Burger. There's also the Impossible Burger. There's all these alternatives to beef that are absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like we set this up. Because I was going to say that.
Okay.
I was going to suggest that. And my epiphany came in Napa when we went to Gott's Burger Bar, and we were on a sort of vineyard tour. I said, okay, we've just got to have a traditional blowout burger and chips in an American diet.
There you go.
Yum, yum.
And I ordered, by mistake actually, this vegan burger, which was, I think, called the Deluxe or the Impossible Burger.
Yeah,
Impossible.
Yep. Sounds right.
I've heard of the Impossible.
It looked the largest one on the menus.
So I'll take it.
Went out, ate it, and afterwards, when we were driving around, I say to the guy, I say, you know, I don't feel, like, really full. Actually, I think I'm going to have things reached tonight. And I feel quite healthy because normally you feel
awful. Meat sweats come.
you don't even feel full. You feel like crap.
It wasn't until we got back to the UK when I was looking at the menus, thinking, what did I order? That was a vegan.
Wow.
And so every time I have a burger out now, I go for the vegan option.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Yeah. Do you know what's funny about that? We had that experience in America when we first tried the Impossible Burger. Now, if you remember, before we went vegan, which was only about 7 years ago, I specifically remember the last time I had the meat sweats.
Yes. And that was me and my mate Addison, and we were skiing in France over New Year, and we ordered like a kilo of steak between us.
Yeah, wow. God.
And we ate it all, and then I woke up in the night feeling like my blood was essentially just fat,
yeah.
You know, yeah. And I couldn't sleep, and it just felt like I felt intoxicated. Mm. And I would say that was the most severe meat sweats I've ever had. Mm. Now, we don't get that anymore because we just eat plants.
Yeah.
So it's hard to achieve that same experience. Mm. But when we did go and have the Impossible Burger for the first time, I got maybe like 10% or 15% meat sweats.
Which is kind of all you want of meat sweats. Yeah. That's the amount you're looking
you get a bit.
For.
So there's a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Probably from all the fat they put into it.
Yay! Yeah.
So whether it's from the beetroot blood, which one of the burgers has, or from synthesized heme, which is also a kind of bean-based blood to make the burger bleed and sizzle, they're kind of quite natural.
And also, I think that taps really into how much of a visual experience eating is and how much you need to see something that makes you feel like that's blood, but it's beetroot.
Yes.
But it sort of takes you somewhere neurologically.
Yeah. Mm. It's also, if you think about a sausage or a burger, it's a very logical way to package food.
Yes.
Okay, like because we get asked quite regularly, it's like, oh yeah, but if you're vegan, like why would you not, why would you eat a sausage? Well, it's because a sausage is a tube and it's a very logical thing to use to cut with your knife and fork.
Yes.
And it's the same thing with a burger. It's essentially just a sandwich, just everything that you need in your hand and just narrow it down.
There's only so many shapes.
Gentlemen of Bosch, it's been lovely. We've not had chefs on. It's really nice to have chefs.
We love to talk about food. Yeah. Thank you for indulging us with both delicious wine and the ability to talk about food. Yeah. Which we love.
It's been genuinely been the best podcast we've ever done.
Thank you for educating me as well.
Thank you, and not one spit between you. Well done.
Yeah. We've still got a bit to finish.
Proper Yorkshire boys. Yes. That's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club, produced by Ben Mitchell.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your normal podcast provider.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wines from around the world and another wonderful guest.
And remember that all of the wines we tasted today are available from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
And thanks again to my parents for Wadadley Kitchen.
That was great.
That was awesome, man. Yeah,
cheers.
You guys are the best.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.